Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Rolling Stone Music Now. Today we're going to talk about Bob Dylan, Nobel Laureate. We're also going to talk about new music from Bruno Mars and Mary J. Blige. But first... And that was a little bit of 24 Karat Magic, the new song from Bruno Mars. I'm here with Brittany Spanos to talk about what we're listening to in the office. What's up, Brittany?
Not much. How are you?
All right. How you doing? So I'm hearing a little bit of Uptown Funk in this Bruno Mars song. How are you liking it? How's it wearing in?
I'm really glad that he's sort of continuing with the more irreverent and fun funk of Uptown Funk and sort of that Mark Ronson influence is carrying over. And I love when Bruno's having a little bit more fun with his music. And you can definitely hear that in 24 Karat Magic all the way through.
For people who don't remember or aren't Bruno Mars people, Uptown Funk was probably like the biggest song of the last 2 years. It was his song with Mark Ronson, super disco oriented. This one's like a little more, it's actually got strong like kind of early 80s hip hop influence, old school hip hop.
Yeah, definitely like golden era of hip hop in it. Lots of disco and early funk, and it's just sort of all fused together and still sounds really fresh the same way Uptown Funk did when it came out. It doesn't feel like too retro or too far off from right now.
I think maybe it's just because I've heard it like 50 times, I'm probably still inclined towards Uptown Funk.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like this one might feel a slightly more forced, like he's trying to do like a catchphrase, like keep up, you know. But, you know, maybe if I just listen to it 30 more times and it's as huge, we'll all be loving it and living for it.
Definitely.
You also wanted to talk about the new song from Mary J. Blige.
Yeah, she just released this new song called Thick of It, which is co-written by Jasmine Sullivan, who recently actually appeared on the Frank Ocean visual album. And so now she's working with Mary J. Blige on this incredible, beautiful song about sort of the end of a relationship and trying to get through the thick of it. And it'll be on her new album called Strength of a Woman that's coming out later this year.
Love ain't just black and white. Ain't that simple? It's hard to tell who's wrong or right. When it's dark with us, I swear I barely see the light.
That's classic Mary J. Blige material. And I'm sorry for her to hear that she just split with her husband of a few years, which is obviously bad personal news, but probably pretty good for her music.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that, when Mary J. Blige has this subject matter, she just goes with it. I'm liking this song. I've just listened to it for a few times, but the bed of it sounds kind of like old Philly soul, like stylistics almost.
Yeah, and definitely one of her most passionate performances in years as a vocalist on a new record. She released her album, The London Sessions, 2 years ago, which is her most recent one. And that was a lot of experimenting with house music and working with Disclosure and Sam Smith. And it's nice to get back to...
Yeah, that couldn't be more different.
Yeah, the queen of hip-hop soul is totally back with this new song.
Well, get ready. Brittany Spanos, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Oh, God said to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe said, man, you must be putting me on. God said, no.
That, of course, was Highway 61 from Bob Dylan, who just won the Nobel Laureate. He is the first musician, of course, the first rock musician to ever win that. I'm here with Andy Green.
Hi there.
And Brian Hyatt.
Yo.
We're going to talk about what this means. I mean, how big is this? I don't know. I mean, like, just for people to understand. Well, this has gotten a lot of attention. It's been the front page of the New York Times.
I think to put it in context, we need to understand is he is, you know, the first member of the Traveling Wilburys to the Nobel Prize.
How did Jeff Lynne feel about this?
We were saying that Jeff Lynne was a finalist for, you know, a Nobel in layering acoustic guitars, but it just, you know, he hasn't quite made it yet.
Yeah. Right. I'm a bit surprised by the reaction to it. It's been like, it was like the biggest news story of all day yesterday. There was like 8 New York Times stories about it. It was everywhere. It was all over my Twitter feed. Just people are going crazy.
He's the cover of the New Yorker. They did an illustration. And it's funny because actually like this old debate about whether like rock music is literature has come up. which kind of surprised me. I mean, like, do you guys take a stand? Like, there actually are some people saying, like, well, maybe it's not appropriate for a rock musician to make to win a Nobel Prize for literature.
I think, listen, the most valid argument I heard was, you know, there's a million ways for musicians to be honored, and that Bob Dylan in particular has been honored a million ways. But there are so few prominent prizes for writers of literature, and that basically he took up a spot that could have been for, you know, a million people who are, you know, novelists or poets who don't get Grammys and don't get a million other things. And I, to be honest, I sympathize with that argument. That's the right one. I do sympathize.
Right. Like, Don DeLillo is never going to be on the Grammys. So why should Bob
he was
Dylan?
I mean, his Bruno Mars duet last year was awesome, but yeah, it didn't, you know, it, I don't think they're having him back. So that's valid. That said, I mean, you know, and then there's this also this issue, like, do the lyrics stand alone? Do they stand alone, Andy?
I think they do. I think a lot of them, they can be read as poetry. And he's not just a lyricist. He has books out. I mean, he has Chronicles, which was an amazing book.
Would you recite the lyrics of the song Wiggle Wiggle, unaccompanied by music?
That's surprisingly creepy, that song. At the end, it sort of flips into a snake.
I agree. You know my whole theory about that song, it's actually about the snake in the Garden of Eden. But but there you go. But anyway.
I think actually you can make that argument. And I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan like you guys. But the fact is that this is not music that was made to be read. So if you want to be like a real stickler and say this is a Nobel Prize for literature, you know, you just go back to the Steve Allen thing, you know, of like reading rock lyrics aloud. And most of Bob Dylan's lyrics would hold up to that treatment. Yeah. But the fact is that these, you know, rock lyrics were made to be sung. They're made to sound good together over music. And so if you want to be really technical, I think you could make a case against this.
I guess, and then the other point that the Nobel Committee made was that there's a long tradition of literature that's meant to be performed. Not to get too academic, but you know, Homer and Shakespeare and stuff. No one would say they're not lyrics, but all that stuff
it's
was
like,
performed.
Yo, you got to hear the Homer.
Without Homer's beautiful tones, how do you even know? You know,
but such a loss.
So I guess that is actually a pretty powerful argument, I think the biggest argument in favor, I was thinking, and maybe it's just a very simple thing, is think about anyone else who put words together, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in the past, whatever, 60 years, who affected more people with their words, affected more lives, affected society more than Bob Dylan. I mean, you have individual lines that, you know, change people's lives, you know? So on that level, sure, right?
There's nobody who's quoted on the same level, at least in a certain generation, you know? There's
no high school yearbook has ever... Yeah,
right. And by Supreme Court justices, even, in recent years, have been quoting him. I mean, he's everywhere.
The interesting thing is to contrast that, the fact that he is now a Nobel laureate, with the continuing existence of sort of Bob Dylan... sort of contemporary, semi-contemporary rock musician, like yes, he was in the Traveling Wilburys. He made, you know, he was in bad movies.
He was in commercials for Victoria's Secret.
Yes, he was. Right. He was the night as someone.
He did a Kaiser Permanente ad too, right? The drug company. People forget that.
I mean that's there was a lot of jokes about he's the first Nobel laureate since whatever to do a Kaiser Permanente ad. Yeah, but I mean, so he's. It's the more you know about Bob Dylan, the more there's this sort of ironies and humor of this come in, because, you know, it's like, you know, how many other Nobel laureates had like their sort of like bad leather jacket 80s phase, you know, it's just kind of, and synth, like how many other Nobel laureates made their bad synth album in the 80s, although Empire Burlesque will defend it, whatever,
but
it's a good album,
it's
the production.
Quality piece of music.
Yes.
I love that album.
But it's just fast, you know, how many other Nobel laureates were other than, as I said, Kenny Loggins, were on the We Are the World sessions, you know, it's just an amazing thing,
and on
you know.
The very day that he got it, he put a casino in Las Vegas.
Which was also noted.
The Cosmopolitan in Vegas on the night of the announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, here at the Cosmopolitan, Nobel laureate Bob Dylan. And,
so many firsts. So many firsts.
Yeah, and on the stage, he said nothing about it, of course. There wasn't one word said.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret. and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
We sit here stranded, though we all do our best to deny it.
Imagine, like, all right, somebody's visiting from Mars. Like, what are the songs that, like, you hold up for Bob Dylan as the ones that get him the Nobel? Do you guys have ones where it's like, okay, that's it, drop the mic?
I think if you go early, you go with Hard Rain's "Ain't Gonna Fall." It was a monumental work. And then sort of like the more druggy ones like Visions of Johanna that are more stream of conscious but are brilliant.
I would say, you know, Blowing in the Wind. Just, I mean, to be very simple. I mean, the times, they're changing. I mean, if you're going to go back, and I think if he had died in 1970, God forbid, you know, I think people might have less of a problem with this. Because I think some of what I was saying is the complications of Bob Dylan existing in the present and doing all the things that, you know, that he ends up doing while trying to kind of make a career in the commercial world of music tend to complicate this. But the truth is, I think if you just look at even, you know, stopping in 1975 or 1970, my God, I mean, you know, there's so many things. Yeah, Visions of Johanna, Tangled Up in Blue.
I feel like Visions of Johanna was one where it just started to feel like he was becoming, like, frayed around the edges in this awesome way. Like, I felt that was, like, another gear for him.
I mean, how many people have sat around thinking about the, you know, the ghost of electricity howls in the bones of her face? Which by the way, last night I thought that maybe I figured that out, and it turns out it's the most simple and ridiculous, that he's just saying, in the lamplight, you can see she has great cheekbones. Yeah. So I decoded it. Where's my Nobel?
It could be like that Biggie Smalls thing where people translate his lyric. Right. You know, like you could just translate, yeah. But she looks good in the light.
But it is definitely worth noting that some of his best songs, I think, are of the past 25 years. I think I think Time Out of Mind and I'm Love and Theft.
Things have changed.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Duquesne Whistle, although, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You know, so somebody was saying, oh, when is Kanye going to get a Nobel Prize? And for some reason, the first thing that jumped in my head is like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't write a lot of his own lyrics. And then, of course, because he has a committee process. But then the next thing I thought is, neither does Dylan in many
cases.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's written 90% of his
songs. Of course. And so probably, it's probably the ratio is probably the same for him and Kanye.
Yeah. Jack London going to get a shout out for the Dylan ceremony?
And who else? Who were the other poets? And I mean, who were the poets
Italian.
There was Henry Timrod, of the poet laureate of the Confederacy.
Andy, could you just explain for listeners at home, like, what we're talking about with Jack London and Henry Timrod for people who don't?
Yeah, the advent of Google Books was a real hit to Dylan's reputation, because you could search just any sentence from his book or his past few albums and find the source, you know, of it. So there's a lot from Ovid. There's a lot from the super obscure poet that's named Henry Timrod, that wrote about the glories of the Confederate States of America.
Ouch.
And in Chronicles, he stole a ridiculous stole he borrowed
appropriated
he appropriated
yeah.
paid
lot,
tribute
a lot of lines from obscure Jack London works and Time Magazine articles and all sorts of stuff. But he has songs that were out in the 80s where most of the lines are from various Bogart movies.
You kind of lose those in the Swedish translations. Maybe the Nobel Committee.
And then on Love and Theft, he took a obscure Japanese novel, The Confessions of the Yakuza, and just full-on took, like, these are many lines, and unlike most of the stuff he did, they weren't public domain. He could have been sued.
The guy was very happy.
He was honored, but in recent years, he's taken a different method, where he sort of, on some songs, in his book especially, just sort of grabs from various sources and combines it into a unique fusion of words.
A bouillabaisse.
Yes.
Well, geniuses steal. That's what they say.
Well, he called the album Love and Theft. He was being very explicit. This is stuff I love. This is stuff I stole.
It'll be interesting to see leading up to the actual prize, which happens when?
In December.
Yeah, whether there's more kind of looking into, but see, I wouldn't call it plagiarism. I really
no,
wouldn't.
It's not.
I think, and is he had a funny thing. Is he was basically like, you know, I won't do the voice. I'm tempted to do the voice, but he was like, you know, it was like Tim Rod's been sitting there. Like, I don't see you doing anything with Tim Rod. Like,
yeah,
which
right.
is well,
it's
know,
a very funny.
We all have access to these same materials, but we can't write the lyrics that are on Love and Theft. I mean, he has a unique eye and he spots things. It's just a different methodology. I think back in the 60s, he would stay up for days, he would take amphetamines and write out like a million lines. You know, this is a different process.
Is there anybody else in pop? We already talked about Kanye. Is there anybody else in this realm who you guys think has a chance
I
to win a Nobel?
That Leonard Cohen at some point might.
Leonard Cohen. Dark, I think he's dark horse.
I think realistically speaking, when you look at the fact that an American hasn't won the Nobel Prize for Literature since Toni Morrison in, I think, 94 or something like that, 93.
Yeah, you're right.
So... no one is. This is never going to happen again.
It's not.
It's never going to. We'll be lucky if an American novelist ever wins again at this rate. I mean, you're talking about it's. I mean, the Nobel Committee, because I've been reading about this, is, you know, they've said that American literature is as a whole. It's actually awesome to take this like outside perspective. They're basically like American literature sucks. They're basically as a whole. They're basically like American literature is cloistered. This is like basically a quote. They said it's cloistered. They don't read enough in translation, so they don't know what's. Of course, I'm accepting myself from this. I read everything in translation.
But Carl Ove Snosgard? Yeah, right. I'm sorry, I butchered his name.
Yeah,
of America.
Snosgard. That's my new band, actually. But so anyway, so they generally think that American literature itself is bad. So it's actually some people have interpreted this as a slap in the face of an American novelist, etc., at the Philip Ross of the world. But you know what? You're not up to it, but this guy is.
Right.
You know, so it's an interesting thing there. And the other interesting thing is what
like don't try to be like the European writers. Just be your kind of fun American selves playing your pop
actually,
music.
Actually, let's dig into that for a second because... I think one of the things that's interesting is, or actually one of the best ways to see this prize, is that it's shared by Dylan with his sources and influences. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, it's honoring the entire kind of essence of Americana. So it's honoring, you know, Robert Johnson. It's honoring Woody Guthrie. It's honoring Odetta. These curators and writers and
Tim
keepers
Rod.
And sure. And Tim and our friend Tim Rod. This is the most airtime Tim Rod has ever gotten in a modern medium. By the way, we should do an all Tim Rod episode. But
that's the bonus.
Yeah,
the
bonus. Yeah. But I mean, I think that's I think that's a powerful way of looking at it. And I think actually, if you look at Dylan's speech, which Rob Sheffield pointed me back to in his excellent piece about why Dylan deserves the Nobel Prize. Last year, Dylan did a speech at this Music Cares event, and it was an uncommonly revealing speech, and what I took away from it when it was released was, wow, it was this kind of fiery speech. It was a little like the Michael Jordan Hall of Fame speech where you kind of take on all your detractors, and that's what I focused on the first time.
And people who didn't even know that they were his detractors.
It was Tom T. Hall.
Tom T. He attacked Merle Haggard.
Yeah,
he compared Merle Haggard unfavorably to Buck Owens. And like a poor Merle Haggard just must not have known what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
He thought they were on good terms. They had toured together.
Yeah, he sequeled one of his songs.
Yeah,
yeah. And I thought we were cool. And and Dylan just went off on him.
Those were the most entertaining parts of the speech. And Bob also, he basically took on critics. It turns out we've been hurting his feelings. Not we, but people have been hurting his feelings when they say he croaks like a frog and can't sing and stuff.
Right.
He was like, they say, I talk through my songs. What about Lou Reed? Why me, Lord? Like, that was literally what he's saying. You know, he was saying that he had a funny thing. He basically was like, they say I torture my melodies. And then he said that he had heard at a boxing match, he had heard someone sing the national anthem. He said it was like an R&B singer. And he was very funny. He said that basically he was describing like the American Idol style melisma stuff, like just like really stretched out notes and like, you know, and he said like she was singing like every note there was and some that aren't or something and just basically this idea that like why is that okay, but his attempts to like alter his melodies are not okay. So all that was interesting. But so this was all the kind of, that's what I noticed last year because there was so much kind of juicy and hilarious stuff in it. But reading it again, what he says explicitly, And this is, and I'll preface that by saying this is someone who used to pretend that his songs came from nowhere. He used to pretend, I mean, he acknowledged his folk roots, but, for example, he never acknowledged reading, you know, say, French poetry that people actually would claim he was influenced. He'd be like, no, I never read any of that stuff. I'm just like a miracle. And then there's a story.
It's interesting. And this is someone who never has admitted to reading any of his press either, who clearly does.
That's a great point. Clearly reads everything.
Yeah.
So there's a story of an old friend who looked while Dylan was basically claiming to be an ignoramus who had somehow manifested this magically. They went to his bookshelf and saw like very carefully underlined French symbolist poetry. So he was completely full of it always.
Yeah.
But in this speech, what he did was he acknowledged the deep, deep influence of the kind of weird, old weird America basement tapes, folk anthology music on him. And he recited the lyrics to, I think, like John Henry and songs like that. And he's like, if you sang that enough times to yourself, you too would write, you know, Blowing in the Wind. It was basically like this thing that he was absorbing this stream and then spitting out a slightly, you know, it's like he dives into this stream of American music, of country, of blues, of folk, and then comes up with new manifestations of it.
There was a little bit of what was amazing about Chronicles in that speech, and that like, oh my God, he just explained this whole stretch of what he does.
Right, you know, right. So I think hopefully, and I don't know if he'll give a speech at the Nobel Prizes.
I know. We should know this. Are you allowed? Do you give a speech at the Nobel Prize?
Do you think he's happy about this? Is there any chance that he doesn't even care?
He's thrilled.
Well, it does. I mean, not to. But he does come with $1 million prize. I should note.
Okay.
$950,000. Yeah. Which I'm
Bob
sure
likes money.
He does like money too, clear. And he likes prizes. He likes recognition. I hope he can give a speech though. The Swedes won't know what hit them.
I would love to think that his reaction was a mix of, that's pretty cool, I've been acknowledged for, you know, because it basically means that, you know, in 100 years, in addition to everything else, he'll be the only songwriter who won a Nobel Prize, which is, you know, in the sweep of history will end up being a big deal. But I would love to think that part of that was like tinged with annoyance, like, oh God, I gotta go to the ceremony.
There's like a 0.1% chance he doesn't care, 99% chance he's like thrilled, a 1% chance he's like, oh, about time.
Yeah, maybe I suppose that he seemed happy at the Kennedy Center and he brought his mom to that. He seemed happy at the White House when he got the Medal of Honor.
He's happy. And we're happy for him. Well, Andy Green,
mm-hmm.
Brian Hyatt, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
Stay tuned for the coverage of Dylan's Nobel laureate in Rolling Stone and rollingstone.com. And that's it for Rolling Stone Music Now. If you like what you heard, leave us a review on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts.